right. You're listening to Indie Bay Radio here in San Francisco. We've been just playing a number of pieces from a CD that we got delivered, and it's called Global Warming, and a number of nice, these are kind of ethereal pieces, and it's called an eclectic mix of global dance grooves. So if you've got CDs or music that you're interested in playing, you know, Clear Channel's not playing your stuff and you're a musician or poet or artist of some kind or another, send them by here. Just go to our site, indiebay.org, and then, you know, hit that good button and or look throughout. You'll find our mailing address and glad to give them a spin. All right. Now, coming up, this as everybody is well aware, September 11th is drawing on nigh. We've got the fourth anniversary now of September 11th, and coming up here in San Francisco is another 9/11 Truth Commission. This will again be down at the War Memorial down at Van Ness and McAllister, and it's very nice to see that huge hall filled up with all sorts of researchers, activists, honest to God, good collection of people who are smart enough to know a bald-faced lie and want to do something about it. So on the phone with us is Dave Kimmel. He's one of the activists from up the Sacramento way. How are you, David?
Hi. Real good, Dave.
Yeah, we're certainly interested in covering the this now fourth anniversary of the 9/11 event. The first two have been dynamite. Collections of different videos and lectures. My God, all the creativity that comes out when various archivists and people who are great with videos and the technology to show the engineering, the trajectories of the planes, the types of fighter aircraft, and all of the the stand down rituals and protocols that would come into place, and when you have the internet and you have a good opportunity to put a large building like the War Memorial into use, we can have a great opportunity to really find out what's going on. So I understand you're somewhat specializing in Building 7. Why don't you tell us what you've learned about Building 7? You could start at the beginning, I guess, if you'd like.
Well, first, I guess I wanted to say that we have a 9/11 Truth meetup group here in Sacramento called Sacramento 9/11 Truth, and we meet the first week of each month at 6 p.m. So far, the day is not really decided on right now. We're going to have to change our location, so for our October meeting, it may be Wednesday or Monday, probably. But we meet at 1401 G Street, Sacramento, and our email address is sac911truth@gmail.com. That's our contact number. I've been just looking at the 9/11 event ever since it occurred and trying to find out all I could from the sources of real information. I think the first step in finding out what really happened is learning who the real sources are. I think once we do that, then we can study and really use our rational minds and think and we start seeing things that don't jive with the official version. So looking at this for a number of years now, I've come to the conclusion that Building 7 is really the kind of the telltale, want to say, smoking gun of 9/11, because very few people even are aware that there was a third skyscraper that plunged to earth on that day, and that was Building 7 at 5:20 in the afternoon, 47 stories high, steel frame concrete structure imploded into its own footprint in less than 7 seconds, and it was unhit by plane or significant debris. It was 300 feet from the closest tower, which was Tower 1. So people can't say that it was the jet fuel causing superfires, because there was no jet fuel that went into Building 7. They can't say that it was the diesel tanks in the basement because in the film of it, which they can view at WTC7.net, three different video versions, including two that showed on CBS, they can see the penthouse at the very top of the building imploding first. So less than 7 seconds, 47 stories, that's almost 6 to 7 stories per second. There really is no other way to explain this occurring other than controlled demolition. The implosion of the building had all the major aspects of a controlled demolition. And
in fact,
five major aspects, according to Jim Hoffman, researcher from the Bay Area, of a controlled demolition. One, it dropped directly into its own footprint in a smooth vertical motion. It collapsed completely in less than 7 seconds. Dust streamed out of the upper floors of Building 7 early in its collapse. WTC7's roof inverted toward its middle as the collapse progressed, and WTC7's rubble was mostly confined to the block in which the building stood. So in that, we know it was a controlled demolition, and we know that it takes weeks, if not months, to set up a controlled demolition in a building of this size, one of the largest buildings in downtown Manhattan, covering an entire city block, 47 stories in height. Takes 3 weeks to months to set up a demolition of this type, that is, plant the charges, time them in sequence, split-second timing, controlled by computer. Who planted the charges in Building 7 prior to 911? That's the question that we have to look at first. Now, we're not positing a theory. We're just asking a question. And from there, I think a real investigation should begin. I think we should reopen an investigation. I think commission was nothing but a cover-up, and we need to reopen a real people's investigation and bring the people accountable, because unless we have justice, we cannot have peace. And by justice for 911, that means justice for the people that really did 911, not the patsies, the Osama bin Laden, Muhammad Atta, etc. No proof has ever been showed. We've just been told that, and we've been expected to believe that official story. Colin Powell promised a white paper, and it never came forward with it. All we know is the administration's word that the Muslims did this, and we think we really have to question this.
Well, that's well stated. You did that in about 3 minutes, and to imagine that the history of 9/11 could be essentially an enormous amount of blather that does not fit with any kind of scientific reality. And frankly, if, as you describe, the building does fall in, was it really 7 seconds?
Less than 7 seconds. It's like 6-something seconds, exactly. In fact, that's about the same speed that it would take to drop a marble in a vacuum from the top of that building to the ground.
Yes.
Of course, the towers fell in 13 seconds. The difference was the towers exploded and Building 7 imploded. That is, the debris didn't spew out hundreds of feet from Building 7 as it did from the towers. But they fell in approximately the same amount of time, judging from their relative heights, you know. Almost the free fall speed. In other words, with no resistance whatsoever. The same speed as it would take to drop a marble or a ball bearing from the top of the building is the time that it took to implode from 47 stories high right down into the ground.
Well, and actually, when you implode a building like that with controlled demolition, you actually create a vacuum, so it sucks the building down. If you build the charges right, the explosions that you put in, you essentially have to empty a certain amount of the building to really do it right. But you create a vacuum which pulls the walls in. It doesn't want, you don't want the walls to blast out and shoot across the street and into a nearby building. You create a vacuum so that it actually creates a hollow, so everything will fall into that hollow. And it's interesting that it's my understanding that when they've looked at the concrete of Building 7 as well as 1 and 2, the concrete has been changed, chemically changed, and it would definitely lead the one to the conclusion that an explosion so heated it up that it turned it into a crystalline form. In other words, if the building buildings 1 and 2 had fallen as described with the jet fuel, the concrete would have essentially remained chemically as concrete, but the greatest mass of the concrete as delivered to the various sites has this high treated, it essentially was heated at an extremely hot and fast rate, and it became somewhat crystalline. And there is something extremely abnormal about the residue.
Who would the heat, yes. As a matter of fact, on September 16th, NASA flew an airplane over the World Trade Center site. This is from an article, let's see, this is from the book Painful Questions by Eric Huffschmidt. NASA flew an airplane over the World Trade Center site and recorded infrared radiation coming from the ground and created a thermal map. 5 days after the collapse of just Building 7, the temperature of a section of its rubble, the surface temperature this is, was still 1,341 degrees Fahrenheit. That was 5 days after, on September 16th. And we know that temperatures like that are only reached through explosions. That is indicative of the use of explosives. Plus, the amount of energy that it takes to blow solid concrete into talcum powder-sized bits is massive, far more than the energy contained in a tank of jet fuel, whereas most of the fuel probably, as we know, went up in the fireballs, because you can actually see people standing in the holes that the planes went into. With high resolution photographs that you can look at in Eric Huffschmidt's book, Painful Questions, and on other websites and stuff. You can see people actually standing in the holes that the planes went into before the buildings were exploded. The other fact that people have a hard time answering is that the emergency personnel on police and fire departments always, in rescuing people, they don't put their own people at risk. That is, you could throw a line to somebody drowning in a river, but you don't want fire people or rescue people jumping in the river because they might themselves risk drowning. However, hundreds of emergency personnel were sent up into the towers after the planes hit, knowing that burning jet fuel could not bring down the concrete and steel structures. And these people are professionals at fire. They know, they've already done drills at the World Trade Center, numerous drills. I'm sure they knew the architectural layouts of the building. They know the burning temperature, the melting temperature of steel. They know the temperatures that jet fuel burns at, and they've studied all these. So they would not put their own people at risk. They didn't hesitate to send hundreds of emergency personnel up into the building. But what they didn't know was, of course, that the building was laced with high explosives. And so then when the building exploded in that amount of time, of course, there were many hundreds of emergency personnel killed. And we think that we can't forget it. We shouldn't forget about this. We need to reopen this investigation.
Yeah, one thing that's interesting about Building 7 specifically is it was the building, it was rather a high-security building because it was the New York office of the FBI, the New York office of the CIA, and the Port Authority. And the Port Authority is not just, the manager of ports, but it handles, it's sort of like the exaggerated Public Works Department of New York. Mm-hmm. And so it handled emergency evacuation preparedness. And in fact, Mayor Giuliani had installed, I've forgotten at which floor, was it like the 38th floor or something like that, and he put in a bunker with high test windows that were designed to withstand something like 105 mile an hour winds.
Yeah, the 23rd floor.
Oh, yeah, so about halfway up. And these windows, the bunker was had its own air. It had its own food rations and provisions and whatnot. And if it takes 3 weeks or longer, did you say 3 weeks or 3 months to build in the demolition charges?
Well, they've estimated, let's see, on a movie.
For a 47-story building, it's not. 3 weeks is probably a short time. But in other words, if you've got the FBI and the CIA in a building, how are you going to be able to bring in that much TNT or whatever kind of explosive devices in and build it into a building right underneath the noses of the FBI and the CIA and the Port
Authority. It's impossible. In fact, a quote from Eric Hushmidt's video, Painful Deceptions, which was narrated by reopen911.org, they say it's inconceivable that anyone could be running around placing explosives in exactly the right places all within 7 hours after the towers fell. Before 5:20, when Building 7 imploded.
Much less that they...
Implosions take a minimum of 2 weeks and up to 2 months to plan and place the charges. And people, if anybody's interested in verifying that, they can just call any demolition company, and I'm sure the gentleman there could give a rough estimate and verify that.
Right, much
easily,
less...
Easily verified fact.
Right, much less the idea that you would have to deliver a truck full of explosives to a building right after the World Trade Centers have already hit the ground. And so the rubble is laying on the ground in the roadway, and you would have to deliver a semi-load full of explosives into a building like that. So it's essentially an impossibility. It had to have been prepared. And in fact, the owner of the building is, I believe he did a National Public Radio interview, and he's quoted as saying, the building they decided to...
Larry Silverstein, in September 2002... on a PBS documentary entitled America Rebuilds, he made the statement, and this was the leaseholder of World Trade Center, the World Trade Center, including Building 7. When they asked him about Building 7, he said, quote, I remember getting a call from the IRR fire department commander telling me that they were not sure they were going to be able to contain the fire. And I said, we've had such a terrible loss of life, maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And they made that decision to pull, and we watched the building collapse. Unquote. And pull is a trade term meaning demolition. So Larry Silverstein, the leaseholder of World Trade Center, admitted to the fact that Building 7 was a demolition. He said it right on the media.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have that evidence right there in addition. Correct, yeah.
Well, and there are so many different aspects of the rubble. There was an architectural commission that was, put together to study how the buildings fell, and they were not allowed to look at the rubble. The pieces of metal and structural supports that should have been in place would have typically, if I understand right, with that with all three buildings, there were a variety of different length rods and supports that held that building up, and they layered them so that you know if you had a five-story rod that would go up the buildings, you would have one start at the first floor, another start at the second floor, another start at the third, and then they would just be adjoining to each other and give additional support all the way up. But the of the rubble, very little survived longer than 20 feet. So it also reflected that there had to have been some kind of an explosive charge because the rubble would not uniformly fall, much less not be twisted. And it would that the rubble conforms to some uniform standard.
20 feet is a length that can be conveniently loaded onto to flatbeds to haul the rubble away. And the controlled demolition, there's a company that was the same company that hauled the rubble away from the Oklahoma event a few years previous that also hauled the rubble away from the World Trade Center. So those links that the metal, the steel, structural steel is blown into are convenient for loading on to flatbed trucks to haul away. Plus, the Fire Engineering Magazine editor, Bill Manning, Fire Engineering Magazine is the paper of record of the fire engineering community, of firefighters all over the country. It's been that ever since the 19th century. And the editor-in-chief, in his January 2000 edition, called the FEMA investigation a half-baked farce, quote-unquote. He was calling for a cessation of the destruction and removal of the evidence, which he pointed out was illegal under the laws of New York. Whenever a skyscraper collapses in a big city like that, it is right on the law books to do a complete and thorough investigation of why that is. Now, here we'd had hundreds of firefighters killed, and yet there was not allowed to be a sufficient investigation as to the cause of how these buildings could have exploded and imploded in such a rapid fashion. And Bill Manning was very angry about it. And in the last sentence of his editorial in the January 2002 edition of Fire Engineering was, quote, "Firefighters, this is your call to action. Contact your representatives in Congress and help us correct this problem immediately." And then another quote, "The destruction and removal of evidence must stop immediately," unquote. So, you know, the firefighters also had protested, and about 1,000 firefighters, as reported in Webster Tarpley's book, 9/11 Synthetic Terror Made in USA, which I would recommend. You can, tarpley.net is a T-A-R-P-L-E-Y, a website. That's Webster Tarpley's website, and that's probably one of the best books on 9/11. But he points out that the firefighters, 1,000 firefighters protested after 9/11, and that was pretty much kept off. I don't remember seeing that on the media. You know, I had to read about it in Webster's book. But Mayor Giuliani also did not go to his command and control center on the day of September 11th. After the planes hit, he did not go into Building 7. Which is interesting because then, of course, Building 7 was standing virtually unhurt. It was evacuated, but Building 7 was there. Mary Giuliani's command and control center on the 23rd floor was there, built for just such an occurrence as this after the early 90s World Trade Center event that happened. And instead of that, he went to 75 Barclay Street, which was a makeshift street-level headquarters. Now, why did Mayor Giuliani not go to Building 7 on the morning of 9/11? Also, in Building 7 were the Security and Exchange Commission, was a Security and Exchange Commission office with many documents, including probably the Enron documents regarding the Enron investigation, Secret Service documents, IRS documents, much other documentation of criminality, you know, in the country were housed in Building 7. So, you know, as a question of motive, you know, we have to look at that.
Yeah, there are so many different crimes of the FBI, the CIA, whatnot, and for them to put all of their documents into that building and then have it conveniently fall apart.
Yeah.
That is true about the Enron documents being in the World Trade Center 7. That was at the high point of that spring of 2001 was the beginning of the brownouts here in California, and the unexplained brownouts and the cry for building more power plants and whatnot. And then conveniently, it was only through dumb luck that that the Enron people got exposed. And by September 11th, there was, as a matter of fact, September 11th as an anniversary was also one of the earliest court requirements in the Enron case. It was an early requirement date for the transfer of documents to the courts to determine whether or not there was criminal behavior on the part of Enron. And 9/11 completely covered that up.
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't...
Yeah, it was also an important date for the Cheney energy. Remember, Cheney put together an energy policy, and a separate court had also demanded documents delivered by that date, mm-hmm. and this completely covered that part up.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, actually, September 11th was also the date of the. You remember there was a commission that was put together. Trying to determine what really happened in the Florida election of the previous year, whether or not Bush had frauded that election.
Yeah.
And everyone was hemming and hawing, trying to determine what had truly happened. And the newspapers, Associated Press, The Washington Post, The New York Times, had jointly put together a study, and that was the date that that study was to be released. And in the name of calming the country, they decided not to release it on that day because they didn't want to put the president at a weakened position when we had just been attacked. And so the Florida study was eventually re-released in early January of 2002 and found that there was enormous fraud in Florida,
mm-hmm.
and culpable fraud. But September 11th was a very significant day for documents.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yes.
This happened to be, right?
Oh, absolutely. The energy policy, Enron, and the Florida election. All of those documents were two demanded by the courts and the third through that study. So it was a very significant day for Bush.
Oh, yeah.
But, so again, if people are interested, this Truth Commission, this will be the fourth anniversary coming up this Sunday. And we urge you to come down to San Francisco if you're in the Northern California region, anywhere in the western side of the country. Actually, people are coming from Canada and New York and all over the country, right?
Yeah, this is film discussion and dialogue and reflection on 9/11 Truth for Peace and Justice, Sunday, September 11th. That's coming up 9 a.m., Veterans War Memorial Building, second floor, 401 Van Ness Avenue.
Yeah, and again, the Sacramento 9/11 Truth, your group is constantly meeting. What did you say? Tentatively, it looks like it'll be the first Wednesday, did you say, at 6 o'clock?
Tentatively, it'll be the first Wednesday in October. At 6 o'clock. We meet every month, the first week in the month, and our day is probably going to be changing from Thursday to Wednesday, but 6 p.m. at 1401 G Street in downtown Sacramento. And there's also a Portland meetup group. I just got back from Portland, and the 9/11 Truth group in Portland meets once a week. Let's see, I just missed their meeting. I believe it's Wednesday evening at Laughing Horse Books. Just contact laughinghorsebooks.org, and they meet at 7 p.m. Every week in Portland. So there's people all across the country and that are really mobilizing again about getting the truth out about 911 and reopening the investigation. There's also William Rodriguez, a janitor, that's come forward because he witnessed one of his colleagues burned actually before the planes hit the tower by explosives that were mysteriously going off in the sub-basements and of the World Trade Center. However, he's not been allowed on the media and wasn't listened to by the commission. Another significant fact is the Building 7 implosion was never mentioned in the 9/11 Commission report. In other words, World Trade Center Building 7 never mentioned in the 9/11 Commission report, the official report. Why not? That in itself is very suspicious. Also, the fact that it has never been mentioned in the media since 9/11. That why wasn't the World Trade Center Building 7 never mentioned by any investigative reporter in the progressive press or the mainstream press of the American media? That's very significant.
Well, many people were so shocked by the first two buildings. It was, my God, you imagine a 47-story building falling by itself, but when you have two 110-story buildings falling, a 47-story building seems small by comparison. So, yeah, I think that...
You'd think it would be a story for an investigative reporter, for instance, for Z Magazine or for The Progressive even, or, you know... But we haven't seen any story, which indicates to me the total control of public perception by the people in the media, including the left media, unfortunately.
Well,
a lot of progressive stations don't go into the 9/11 issue. We have to ask why. Why not? I mean, we have free speech. We have to look at this, you know?
Yeah, I don't want to make excuses for why people don't cover it, but I think, frankly, by the time that the two buildings had fallen, they had cordoned off that area. It was so horribly clouded with asbestos dust and every other kind of toxic air that it was pretty easy for the news crews and everybody to be out of the area. I think it was just dumb luck that we had the three different camera angles of Building 7. No one was expecting it. And But I frankly have heard, I pay a lot of attention to talk radio, and there are people constantly talking about Building 7.
Yeah.
A lot of people believe.
Even more now than used to be.
Sure. There are a lot of people that believe that if we're going to wake up the American public to what really happened, there are two different issues: why the military stood down and what happened truly in Building 7. And once you get into those and you realize that scientifically something very strange happened with Building 7, plus the fact that the military didn't chase four planes at all, and possibly chased one, the Pennsylvania plane, but it's impossible.
Very slowly.
Yeah,
you know, when they can go at speeds a lot faster than they did.
Absolutely. It's impossible for it to have happened without it being an inside job. So that said. Hey, well, thank you, David. We'll look forward to seeing you on Sunday. And, of course,
sure.
There are various websites. With any luck, all of the conference portions will be videotaped and or audiotaped and put online so that if you're not able to get into San Francisco, you'll certainly be able to check out the various websites and hear the lectures afterwards.
Is it okay to give a couple of those websites on the
air? Oh, absolutely. Fire away.
Right. Okay, we have Carol Brulé's website, communitycurrency.org, www.communitycurrency.org. And then there's the 911truth.org and also sf911truth.org, which are three major websites regarding that.
Okay, and I had someone else sidetracking me there, so I missed all of what you said. But all right. Well, great. We sure appreciate your calling in, and we'll put this up on the Indie Bay site and have all your friends check this site, and we'll be able to hear the interview. And do feel free to self-publish. You don't have to have audio in order to publish articles and links to photographs. Indie Media is a mighty large scale now. We've got hundreds of cities, and if you've got something that's tailored to one city or another, feel free to publish up there. And don't forget to publish the dates of your regular meetings up there in Sacramento.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Yeah, I will. I wrote an article on Building 7, which I have, you know, coming out now in at least one publication and possibly more. So,
well, if you want to put it up as a link, or if you also want to put the entire article up as a news story, this is the time to do it, 2 days for the anniversary.
Well, I think this definitely is the story of our times, is the implosion of Building 7. I think it's the biggest story of our times right now. We really need to understand this in order to understand anything about what's really going on in the world today.
Well, that's right. Yeah, it's looking at what's happened, for example, with Katrina, it's pretty apparent that this was sabotage. These people were not, you know, whether it's Brown and Cheney and Bush and the whole cadre of them, they sabotaged everything that could possibly go on with rescue and cleanup and remediation. These things were done with the largest possible scale. I think the common belief now is that there's, as you're probably aware, a month or so ago, the Supreme Court made a determination that through eminent domain, anyone's private property can be subject to the economic desires of the fat cats in the region. Mm-hmm. So if you look at what happened in New Orleans as being a massive land grab by...
isn't it, the timing of that is interesting, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
The timing of that Supreme Court, you know, the eminent domain, and now the New Orleans disaster right after it?
Well, much less that the bankruptcy laws are now clicking in, and that the Republicans were offered amendments to the bankruptcy bill, which said that people could file for bankruptcy in the case of a natural disaster. The Republicans fought it tooth and nail, and there is no bankruptcy protection for natural disaster anymore. So, you know, it's very clear that the timing is very significant. Plus, yesterday, Bush signed an executive order saying that they could drop wages on a public works project rather than offering prevailing wages. So, he's playing a monarch role in in this. So it's we're going to have to look at Jubilee and any number of other opportunities to get America and the world out of this this crisis that we're in now.
Then there's other facts I'm not sure too many people are aware of, but there's the HAARP technology, H-A-A-R-P.
Oh, yeah.
Its goal, we believe, is weather modification. And then there are also the chemtrails, which you can see looking up in the sky on many days. A lot of people think they're vapor trails, but I just encourage people to research HAARP chemtrails. Just Google HAARP, H-A-A-R-P, chemtrails, and Katrina, and see what sites you come up with, because we think that the technology is years ahead of what the public knows about, and they may know how to do weather modification on a major scale that has been kept, those truths been kept from the public. And we need to try to learn about these things and educate our fellow people on the possibilities of this. I'm not saying I know for sure about this. I have no secret knowledge or anything, but certainly there's a lot of people looking at this and studying this, and I'm one of those people.
Yeah, I've been hearing all sorts of different studies about or discussion about HAARP for, they've been pushing that for 20 years or something. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, we just...
I believe it was Napoleon that said if a person can control the weather, they can control the world.
Yeah.
And, so
and we know from the Project for the New American Century that is the goal, basically, is world dominance. They stated it right in the neocons in their paper. And now they're in power here in America. And
well, they're not in power. They're pretenders to the throne. So that's right. All right. Well, thank you, David. We'll see you on Sunday.
Okay, Dave. Yeah, I'm looking forward.
All right. And so you are listening to Indie Bay Radio here in San Francisco, and we will see you on Sunday. This is going to be a great opportunity for Americans to take some stock of their lives. The massive fraud that's happened whether it's 9/11 or the other aspects of the massive looting of America and the world in the name of crises, it's just very par for the course.